Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
A New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We go immediately to the news of the Secretary of State and Secretary of Homeland Security traveling to Central America, to Panama. The headline reads, in part, Blinken says tackling migration challenges, priority for U.S. in Panama. We're looking at the Central American Isthmus of Panama, which over the last 100 years plus has been an issue of political tension because of the building of the Panama Canal, because of the, what you'd have to say, annexation of a piece of Colombia that passes into the U.S. control because of these days migration. The Isthmus of Panama, the very narrowest neck of Central America, includes something called the Darien Gap, where the Highway 1 from Alaska ends momentarily. There's a 60-mile gap. It begins again in Colombia. That 60-mile gap is a triple canopy jungle. It's impenetrable except for routinely now. Migrants from all over the world risk everything to go through those 60 miles up and down murderous pathways. But that migration has increased each month for the last year, to my knowledge, and is now again peaking. Initially, it was dominated by Haitians or Cubans. Now it's dominated by Venezuelans. So we begin this story with the priority of the Darien Gap and Panama and what is to be done. Professor, I tell the long version of the Darien Gap because it's become increasingly important to me that these young people, and they're chiefly young, many with children or pregnant women, risk everything in order to make that perilous journey from Colombia to Panama. They then risk everything by being bused north or making their way through Central America all the way to Mexico, where they risk other bad actors and thieves and coyotes to get to Texas. Now, the Secretary of State and Secretary of Homeland Security have visited personally. But I believe this has been a long-standing issue with the United States, not beginning with the Biden administration. Is there anything close to a solution? Because these are brave young people. They have dreams. They've been misinformed that they will be welcome or find a way, although that can be an irregular promise because so many have entered the U.S. without adequate documentation these last years. So, is this a long-standing problem, and does anyone have a solution to it other than a fence? Good evening to you.
It's called the Conference of Foreign Ministers on Migration, in which you have Secretary of State Blinken and Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas attending. It's symbolic that you actually have 20 different Western Hemisphere countries which are represented, not just the Central American countries, indicating the way in which this has become really multiple different migration challenges across the region. We oftentimes talk about the Central American migrants that come up through Mexico, but as you also alluded to, you have increasingly a Venezuelan migration that is coming through that same area, beginning oftentimes in Necacoli there in going into the Darien Gap. Previously, we've seen Cuban migrants as well as Haitian migrants, among others, use that. And so across the board, it's interesting that over the past year, an estimated 42% of those coming up to the Mexican border were actually non not Mexicans and Central Americans, were other groups. Now, that contrasts to the previous year when only 8% were not either from Mexico or Central America. So in many ways, the fact that you've got 20 Western Hemisphere countries represented at this conference on migration, it really shows that the degree to which it's about many different groups, the Venezuelans, the Haitians, the Cubans, even people coming through from Africa, working their way through the region. And it's not just about Central American migration anymore. And certainly this has been a longstanding issue, the question of migration. It's certainly evolved over the years. We can go back, for example, during the wartime era with the famous Bracero program, where we actually welcomed Mexican migrants to work in the agricultural sector. And of course, although that has evolved, the question, even the President Ronald Reagan, who actually regularized the status of many Latino immigrants in the United States. But this continues to evolve. And the biggest evolution right now is the question of how to deal with the new focus on those who are applying for asylum, which is a special category, and certainly the Biden administration's posture of allowing those asylum seeking migrants to be wait in the United States while they are processed, in many ways has increased the number of people who want to come up through, not just Central Americans, but certainly the fact that a couple months ago you had the Biden administration granting temporary protected status to 320,000 Venezuelans. That has arguably increased the number of Venezuelans that want to come specifically to the United States along that treacherous route. You have other flows as well. So it's a complicated, multidimensional challenge. One of the other big challenges right now certainly is the expiration of what was called Title 42, by which previously the United States, because of COVID-19, could essentially refuse entry to even those seeking migration on for reasons of asylum. And so there's fear, obviously, with the end of Title 42 that, that being able to just come in and wait in the United States, that's also going to lead to a dramatic increase in the number who try to make that treacherous journey. So multidimensional, multiple groups. But this problem has been there. This challenge has been with us for, well over a century.
Anecdote, Evan, because I've done reporting on this for more than a year. These are not elderly people looking for a handout. These are young people. I've seen videos of the receiving camp at the Darien, at the head of the highway, where they're bused to Costa Rica and then different routes all the way north through Nicaragua, through Central America to Mexico. These are young people looking for work, looking for an ability to live their lives and send money back home to their elderly or friends in the villages they left behind. I've seen plenty of videos to show that coming out of that extremely dangerous Darien Gap, where the river system, you'll be sleeping in the bank of the river and there'll be a flash flood and you're gone. Bodies throughout the region tossed away. The estimate is that 10% perish in the gap. But I've seen young women, pregnant young women, coming out of the boats because the Embera tribe, which is native to the area, brings them, takes them the last route, the last moments from the end of the trek downriver to the receiving camp run by Panama. And it seems strange to say you're not permitted here or you're not welcome. Because, of course, one of the reasons the U.S. is prosperous is our migration. We're all migrants here. So I get confused when I see the facts of the matter and then watch these ministerial conferences about how they're going to solve it. I don't think that a fence is going to solve it. I don't think threats are going to solve it. I don't think closing the Isthmus of Panama is going to solve it. Is there another way going forward? And you might have already mentioned it. What about the idea of returning to the Eisenhower era of giving people work permits without citizenship? Is that a solution?
First of all, to distinguish, because of the geographical location of the Darien Gap, those migrants who are coming from Mexico or particularly from Central American countries, Honduras, Guatemala, and to extent El Salvador, especially, generally don't pass through there. They're already to the north of that as they move towards the United States. And so particularly when we look at that dangerous area in Nicocolí and in that treacherous crossing, that tends to be generally those who are coming south from the Caribbean, such as the Cubans and the Haitians. Those are coming oftentimes in from African destinations. Those who are coming in from Venezuela and elsewhere, working their way up through that land route. What you alluded to, the question of to what degree are temporary work programs a remedy? To what degree are increasing quotas of certain groups a remedy? The problem often is that the number of people, because of the need in the region, who want to come in, oftentimes exceed that, what can we officially establish in terms of quotas. And honestly, the processing capability that we have, we have a really difficult problem with consular affairs in many countries across the region, which means that both in the region as well as in the United States as well, the amount of time that you have to wait to be able to be officially granted an application is oftentimes just unacceptable. And so there are probably certain things that we can do to expand the number of people who can come in legally, increase our capability of processing legally. That's a policy issue. But we probably will always have more people who want to come in than those that will pay the money and wait the time to come in legally. And one of the issues right now is that on the southern border, as the governor of Texas and others have shown, the authorities are just so overwhelmed, and the legal and humanitarian capabilities of dealing with that in a way that does not involve just letting those immigrants in to the country is just the system is just overwhelmed at this time. And so it is becoming increasingly a political debate in Washington, among other things.
I'm speaking with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College. We're going to turn to one of the two big elections upcoming in this calendar year, Colombia, where a leading candidate, his name is Petro, has made a statement about expropriation. What is it? And why is a man leading in the polls making promises about expropriation that he won't do it? The New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.